Dr. John Warwick Montgomery says, "A secular world desperately needs thinking, rational Christians." This month, read more from Dr. Montgomery and other experts on science and theology by subscribing to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's The Lutheran Witness. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/trylutheranwitness.
Every time you see the argument for gender neutrality or completely sex-blind treatment of men and women, you wind up seeing women get the short end of the stick.
The Supreme Court created themselves the National Abortion Control Board because they control abortion law, they control abortion doctrine, they control abortion policies.
Why have we neglected hundreds and hundreds of years of heritage in our churches? Why do we sing garbage? Instead, we have paint-by-numbers pictures of Jesus playing wiffle ball with the kids.
If the church is going to survive where it will survive, because it will survive, it will do so on the forgiveness of sins.
This is Stan in Carson City, Nevada, and I just love listening to Issues Etc. while I'm vacuuming floodwaters out of the game room in my home.
I think we could call it somewhat disappointing. That's not the way it's being portrayed in the press, of course, but this thing was greatly oversold. A Day Without a Woman. We were told, or at least I think we can say it was strongly implied, that this strike or this protest that was held yesterday was going to bring the economies of some cities to a halt. It did close some schools, there's no doubt about that, although it's unclear as to whether the schools had to close or just closed in support of A Day Without Women. That's hard to tell. Was it a misfire, or does it have the potential to backfire? And what in the world was it all about? It seemed to lack focus for a political protest. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of The Federalist about A Day Without Woman protest, her thoughts on the various misfires of the day. Aaron Wolf will join us after that. There is a girl state wrestling champ who is transitioning from being female to male. In a sane world, it would simply be a girl on a wrestling team who is doping with testosterone and winning all her matches, which, of course, wouldn't be tolerated at any level of the sport, but it is in the name of sexual equality and gender theory. We'll talk with Aaron Wolf about that. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about a New York Times story about a Christian charity closing operations in India. Does it answer the crucial question of whether it's still legal to evangelize in India? Then Pastor Brian Ketchermeyer is alongside for our series, Christ in the Old Testament. Will be in Hosea chapter 1. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a regular guest. She joins us to talk about A Day Without a Woman protest. She's senior editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled, Day Without Women Was a Bit of a Bust. Here were its worst misfires. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here with you.
Of all the misfires that happened yesterday surrounding this strike or protest, what was the biggest?
Oh, man, that's actually difficult to answer because it was all such a mess. And in fact, that's what I would say. It's that it didn't have a clear agenda. It got a lot of media coverage, but I don't think anyone knew what it was trying to accomplish. And a lot of what it said you could do to participate in the day of protest was contradictory. For instance, one of the things they said was that you could protest by avoiding shopping for the day, but another thing you could do was to go shopping at female-owned businesses. I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. It's confusing. And again, what's the goal? Why are we doing this? What's the action we're trying to accomplish? It was just way too muddled to be successful.
Of the international coverage of this, and it did get international coverage because it was held in conjunction with the UN-sanctioned International Day of Women. I saw a BBC story, and of all things, it went to Manhattan to a tattoo parlor where women were standing in line to get a special tattoo for the day. What does that tell you about this?
Well, yeah, they're getting tattooed the words of Senator Mitch McConnell, something like, "Nevertheless, she persisted," which was about how Elizabeth Warren continued to violate Senate rules to disparage one of her colleagues. It's an interesting choice. I always want to run a tattoo consulting business, most of which would be think long and hard about whether you want to get that put on your body for all time. But it just kind of speaks again to the frivolity of the event. And, you know, it's people are putting forth a lot of emotion, but I don't know toward what end. It is very interesting, too, that the day is tied. It's a socialist holiday. It actually sparked the Russian Revolution. A commemoration of this in Russia in 1917 was how the Russian Revolution started. And it used to only be celebrated by socialist or communist countries, and now it has some liberals in other countries also celebrating it. But it's, very interesting.
The other thing that I think you note is, in terms of its frivolity, there were things like, don't smile? What was that all about?
You know, it's one of these things that feminists say, that women smile too much, or they fake smile, or they apologize too much. And there is a certain truth to women not being assertive in a way that sometimes is not helpful for them. At the same time, it seems like so much of feminism is about taking things that make women unique and that are our strengths, like we are good at smiling, we are good at maintaining relationships and thinking about how to maintain relationships by being nice and polite. These are not bad things, they're good things, and that they are disparaged and that we're told to be more like men who, for biological and other reasons, have different strengths or tend to have different strengths, because, you know, this doesn't apply unilaterally. It just is a great example of how a lot of feminism is about making women feel bad about our natural strengths and our differences from men.
Let's talk a little bit about I would call it the trumped up sense of history. We're out here, we're making history. This is an historic day. You know, the most that the national news coverage could muster yesterday in the evening news was thousands of women nationwide did this. If it'd been 10 or hundreds of thousands, that might be history.
Yeah, it was also interesting as a reporter, and I talked about this with some other reporters, we were deluged with information about this day of protest from hundreds of organizations. This was clearly a highly funded, well-coordinated event, and the fact that it didn't really take off is interesting to me. I mean, this is the type of media coverage that the annual pro-life march could only pray for, and yet nothing really happened. In my area, the most interesting thing that happened is that a couple of school districts closed because teachers took the day off and school districts allowed them to do that. Now, normally in a leave policy, once so many people are asking for a day off, you stop allowing that because it's affecting the education of the children. I live in an extremely liberal area, and people were livid, and particularly livid because while relatively privileged teachers were able to take this day off and go get manicures or whatnot, if they went to a woman-owned manicure business, the poorer women who might be single mothers, who don't have good child care options, who can't really afford to lose a day's wages, they were completely left in the lurch. And this is another problem about these type of protest events that enable people with a certain amount of wealth and a certain amount of resources and a supportive network to take part in these things without any thought about how they affect poorer or other people who don't have that luxury. And so when you saw some traffic blockades, that doesn't hurt wealthy people. They can still do business on the phone while they're sitting in the car waiting to get through the traffic blockade. But the poor mother who can't miss another day's work or get fired, who, you know, has been told that she shouldn't bother showing up if she's going to be late for her shift at the restaurant, that's the type of woman you're hurting. And this speaks again to how muddled the messaging was and how misguided some of these efforts were. If they truly wanted, I don't know what they wanted to do, but if they wanted to do it, they weren't really thinking through how to persuade people.
There was a really weird tweet from one of the organizers of the Women's March, which was associated, of course, with this Day Without Women. That was kind of a momentum maintaining part two, where she talked about women birthing half the population and being half the population. What do you make of that?
I have so many questions about this quote. This was proudly tweeted out by the Women's March, and yesterday's event was a follow-up to the Women's March. They proudly tweeted out this idea that women birth half the population. And I don't know what they were thinking or why they left it up. Of course, women birth all of the population, but it speaks also to this issue of how a big feminist action is that there's supposedly a pay gap where women are paid less than men. And they get that figure by literally just adding up how much women are paid and how much men are paid and dividing and saying, oh, they only make you know, 78 cents on the male dollar. But they don't think about how women usually make different career choices. They choose different degrees when they are going to school, and they make different decisions about the amount of hours they'll work in a given day, whether they're willing to move from their families or do hardship work, all sorts of things that when you control for that, the pay gap essentially evaporates to the margin of error. And so one of the big reasons why men are paid more than women is because they choose professions that have more economic value for their families, like engineering, technology, math, science. And women tend to go into caring professions like teachers. That's why you saw the teachers striking yesterday, healthcare professions and whatnot. So the thing about this tweet, it showed an ignorance of both math and science that I thought was not a very good way to close that pay gap if you want to encourage women to go into science or math-related fields. Having a basic understanding of biology and percentages is probably a good starting point.
Well, speaking of the leadership, I think they managed, or some of them, the organizers of A Day Without Women, managed to get themselves arrested or at least detained for blocking traffic. What was the story there?
Oh, I didn't realize that there were any arrests, but I do know that the people who are organizing some of these things have a long history of anarchistic or other, you know, riot type behavior. I think one of the organizers spent time in prison for terrorism. So that's another thing that I don't think was covered well with the Women's March, which was how radical some of the people who were involved in the march were. It was presented breathlessly by so many media outlets as being this very cheerful, lovely thing. And I think for a lot of the people who went, I don't think they understood how radical the organizers were. But it would be a good thing to note that there is some violence on the part of these people, radical ideology, some extreme political philosophy that leads to the deaths of millions of people. You know, these are the types of things that a media environment should be putting into their coverage of what they clearly are cheerleading.
Molly Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about the Day Without a Woman protest. When we come back, we're going to discuss its, well, lack of focus. Stay tuned.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Law and Gospel, the Reformation Solas, the Theology of the Cross, the Means of Grace, Simultaneously Saint and Sinner. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity. It's written by regular guest Dr. Al Schmidt. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity is published by Concordia Publishing House. 1-800-325-3040, or read an excerpt at issuesetc.org. Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office. 314-416-8117.
I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
Welcome back. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, we're talking with Molly Hemingway of The Federalist about the Day Without a Woman protest. Molly, the word that came to mind in watching the coverage of the protest or the strike was pretense. It seemed to be that there was a lack of focus. We're going to strike. We're all going to wear the same color. The why of the strike didn't seem very relevant.
Well, it actually usually works for them, too. I mean, that's the thing. I don't think the Women's March had a clear agenda other than keeping pro-lifers out, and it was mostly anti-Trump, but it was presented as a Women's March, as if women were widely in agreement with the goals of the march. You can kind of get away with it when you have a media that is willing to fill in the gaps of your messaging. In this case, it was such a bust. So few people participated in it. So few people understood even the pretense of what they were claiming to be about, that it just didn't work at all. And I think it was too difficult for even a largely compliant, you know, media class to help out with. Even if it had been something as simple, I mean, I live in a very liberal area. I was in Washington, D.C. Hardly anybody was wearing red yesterday in a way that you couldn't tell if that was one of the things you could do, by the way, is wear the color red, which is so silly because, you know, people wear red normally on any day. And that's what I didn't know, if the red I saw was just people wearing red normally or if it was some political protest. And if that's in D.C., the belly of the beast, I don't think it's going to work elsewhere.
You talked about participants who may have just been caught up in the hoopla and were unaware of the organizers' pasts and kind of their record in terms of anarchistic ideas. And I've asked this of other commentators, do we need, especially if we're going to criticize this, do we need to distinguish between the average soccer mom who just kind of gets a bee in her bonnet about this and decides that she wants to go and take off work or march in the streets of her town, and the organizers?
Well, yeah, I certainly do think you need to distinguish, but you also need to inform. I mean, one of the problems we have is we have a populace that's not very well educated on self-government, how you preserve self-government, what are the political or ideological threats to self-government. And so just talking through these things is actually very important for maintaining civil discourse and a political climate that people can cooperate and tolerate each other. We are seeing shocking levels of ignorance that we shouldn't be surprised by, because people have been educated in a system that hasn't done a good job of explaining history or political thought for decades. We are reaping what we have sown by our participation in that educational system, and people should think really long and hard about whether they want their children or grandchildren educated in that way when, you know, we see that not knowing the basics of economics or self-government can lead to people flirting with or even adopting murderous ideologies. That's not good.
You have talked before, I think it was on the occasion of the Women's March, which was really, if you had to put a label on it, an anti-Trump protest after his inauguration. But you talked about it in the context of a broader protest culture. Refresh our memories.
Well, there is a difference between people on the left and on the right in terms of their tolerance or enjoyment of protest culture. There is really very little protest movement on the right. That is because people on the right tend to be more individualistic. People on the left tend to be more into collectivism. The only time you really saw it in recent years was the Tea Party protests, which had a very specific set of goals. Or you see it on the right insofar as the right aligns with the pro-life movement. You see massive protests each year on that. But that's, you know, that's something that people on both left and right can agree against violence in the womb. But there is something very helpful about the strength in numbers that the left finds in these public acts. There's almost a ritual to it. And so I think they have gotten a lot of enjoyment out of it in the last couple months, and it will continue. Whether it will be persuasive is entirely another thing, and that's one thing I would encourage them to think through their messaging. I mean, take something like the protests against the immigration ban. You know, there are really complicated and interesting arguments on both sides of that. When you see a protest movement that's rioting or having signs that say, we don't want any borders, it can actually lead people to reject your messaging even more than they, or, you know, they might have been receptive before, but it can lead to a pushback. So it'll be interesting to see if the left thinks through persuasion a little bit more.
Well, that's kind of the big question I think a lot of people were wondering about yesterday. You speak of it in terms of misfires. Is there a possibility of a backfire?
Oh, I mean, I think that we've seen nothing but a backfire to the feminist movement in the last several decades. This is what is so interesting to me about how predominant feminist messaging is in our culture. You hear people in Hollywood talking about it all the time. People at the major networks are avowedly feminist. The actual poll numbers show that very few Americans identify as feminist. Nearly all of us believe that men and women are equal in terms of the law and should have the same rights afforded to each other. So as far as what the feminist movement claims to believe in when they are talking about themselves, they should have 80% of Americans saying that they're feminist if it's true that feminism is just about the belief that men and women are equal. That's not what feminism is about, and it hasn't been about it for decades. And so you're seeing a pushback on that. There's so many reasons for it, too. One of them is the feminist movement is overtly hostile to so many women. They denigrate those of us who choose to raise our children in our homes or make different work decisions based on our desire to be with our children, or who believe that men are really wonderful and different from women and that this is something where we should cooperate with each other instead of compete. Their messaging doesn't work for a lot of women, and it's also so extreme. It's tailored toward women who are really focused on getting that corner office or becoming CEO, when most women have a belief in doing some type of mixture in work and life balance, and they want a life, for them, a life well lived involves successes in their relationships and in their vocations, other vocations.
Finally, a little incident that I think may be symbolic of a day without women is an Ohio bookstore that decided to do something for Women's History Month. What was it?
A female staffed bookstore thought it would be a good idea to take the books that they have in their store that are authored by men and turn the bindings around so that nobody would be able to shop for them easily. And it's a fascinating political action. I suppose we should be thankful that they didn't actually burn the books, although I wonder why they didn't just take the, you know, if they really are committed to denigrating male authors or subverting them, why are they selling these male-authored books to begin with? But they said they wanted to illustrate the fiction gender gap, so they've silenced the male authors, leaving works of women in view. And, you know, we'll see how that goes for them. But again, it's just this such harsh extremism toward men that is not, you know, women, again, we tend to be really good at understanding relationships and the importance of men and women working together and the importance of men in our lives, and this is not a message that supports that.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is senior editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column there titled, Day Without Women Was a Bit of a Bust. Here Were Its Worst Misfires. You can find a link to her columns on the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org, and you can follow Molly on Twitter at MZHemingway. Molly, thanks.
Thank you.
We haven't heard much about the Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch lately. Of course, his nomination hearings are scheduled. It's not a surprise that among his greatest opponents for his nomination to the Supreme Court are the advocates of euthanasia. We'll find out why their real opposition to him with Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism right after this.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people. by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.
The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, glories of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth.
At Adventist Lutheran Church in Zionsville, Indiana, God's Word and Sacraments work to forgive sinners through the gospel of Jesus Christ. We invite you to join the rich heritage of traditional liturgy in our Sunday morning worship.
You can find us online at adventlutheran.org.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Emily Post recommends polite conversation on topics like the weather. But the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's magazine, The Lutheran Witness, is no Emily Post. Go to cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 issues and receive the March issue covering controversial topics like climate change, overpopulation, and the intersection of science and theology. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performance Fitness 618.com.